it's the Doctor Who Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us here. We appreciate it. Keep winning the sale, the Corolla Pirate Ship, and click through on the appropriate, you know, the Amazon of those guys, and check out the people that support us, like Hydrolite. We love those guys. It's my privilege to welcome today Chris DiStefano. Chris, welcome.
How you doing, brother?
DiStefano or DiStefano?
DiStefano. However you want to say it, Dr. Drew, you're a handsome guy, and I'm lost in your musk.
Comedy specialist Chris DiStefano, size 38 waist.
Yep.
January 18th, Comedy Central. You can see it at cc.com as well, right?
Yep.
His website, the podcast is History Hyenas. New episode Sundays on iTunes. Your website is
ChrisDComedy.com.
ChrisDComedy.com. Twitter handle at Chris Comedy or Chris D Comedy?
Chris D Comedy. Chris Everything's D Comedy. Chris D Comedy.
And before the mics heated up, we were talking about your physical therapy degree, your history of physical therapy.
Yeah.
And I've got a rotator cuff problem. And you were saying when my infraspinatus got inflamed, the
subscapularis. When your infraspinatus got inflamed, most likely subscapularis probably is overcompensating.
So my shoulder function is such I can't go straight up over my head anymore, really. Something's limiting that.
That's you. Well, you got to be careful. You got to keep your fingers moving because you don't want to get adhesive capsulitis, frozen shoulder.
I know.
So you don't want to fuck with that.
I hang.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But you got to make sure. Have you gotten MRIs, x-rays,
no,
any of that stuff?
Because I'm not going to do physical therapy. I just know I'm not going to do it.
I work out
every day. That's the best I can do.
Well, the only concern I'd have
is a calcific tendonitis.
Yes,
because
you don't want to, you know, the range of motion. I'm telling you, man, when I was a PT, I used to work with these patients and they had this limited range of motion.
Yeah, but you're talking about old people where it's this, you know, where I'm taking my elbow up to my shoulder level.
No, but you're a very active guy.
My range is here. It's just the kinesiology is just not the same as this one. It's not as free.
Right.
That's all.
Well, when did you hurt it?
3 years ago.
3 years ago?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Come on yourself.
Let me get in there. Take your shirt off. Let's get some music on. Let me rub you down, Dr. Drew. It's a wet dream of mine.
Come on now. You should still do physical therapy. Why give that up?
Well, dude, I used to be...
You had a doctorate. I
have
a
doctorate degree. Yeah, I was a pediatric physical therapist too, like specifically pediatrics, you know, mentally, physically handicapped kids. So that was my specialty.
That is no fooling.
It's no fooling. And it's funny because like I sound the way I sound. I look the way I look. So like I felt like every time a patient would come in, like they just thought I was like fixing a light bulb in there. They were like, "Where's the doctor?" I was like, oh, "It's me." Not that I'm a doctor. You know, you're a real doctor.
Yeah,
I have a real doctor degree.
Doctor in physical therapy. I don't know if people appreciate it. The training is rigorous and the doctor programs are very rigorous.
3.5 years postgraduate, man.
Yeah.
I sacrificed my mid-20s. I didn't do anything, man. I was in that library and then I started comedy in my last year of PT school.
How'd that happen?
I always wanted to do stand-up. I was looking forward to being a physical therapist as well. But then I just caught that stand up bug. I started doing open mics in New York City. I took this class at Gotham Comedy Club. It's a great comedy club in New York.
22nd Street.
Yep. Beautiful club. And I took this class, man, and the owner, Chris Mazzilli, just popped in one day.
Was Jimmy Big Balls there in those days?
Jimmy Big Balls. I don't know if he was there. No.
No?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Lisa Lampanelli.
Lisa Lampanelli's ex, yeah. Yeah. But he's there now, of course. But I don't remember if I saw Jimmy back then. But, you know, Chris Mazzilli, you know, I was doing the comedy class, and he talked to a group of us, and he said, look, there's about 20 of you here. He said, I come in, these classes happen every few months. He said, maybe one of you will be doing it in a year. He said, probably, statistically, none of you. He said, and if anybody wants to be that one person that's going to be doing it in a few months, he said, here's the analogy I can give. And this was big to me. I heard it because I played basketball in high school and college. Basketball was my life before physical therapy school and before comedy. He said, a basketball player doesn't make the NBA by just doing it once a week.
Right.
He or she has to dedicate their life to this. So if you really want to make it in comedy, you have to look at this like a professional athlete and you cannot half-ass it. You have to practice your free throws. You have to practice dribbling with your left, with your right. He said, so you have to practice, you know, doing comedy in front of audiences you're not comfortable with. You have to practice, you know, doing late night set jokes. You have to practice doing your hour. You have to do all these things and you have to dedicate your whole life to it. And then something clicked in my brain where I was like, I want to be, even though he never said anything to me, he never saw me perform, in my head, I was like, I'm going to be that one guy and I'm going to dedicate my life to this. And I came out of PT school, got my doctorate, passed my license exam in 2010, started working at a school in New York City. You know, I was a pediatric PT with the mentally and physically handicapped kids. I would wake up every morning at 6:30 a.m., help get the kids off the bus, treat them till 4, do open mics from like 5 to 10. And then the only way to get on stage as a new comic in New York and even in LA is you can do this thing called, you can either bark for people, which is like it means like you stand outside a comedy club and you hand out flyers. And they'll put you on last. So I would get on at like 1:30 in the morning and do 5 minutes in front of six drunk people.
Pete Holmes' crashing series highlights this.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was my route. Or you could do these things called bringer shows where you would bring two or three people or five people to a club. And in exchange for bringing the people, you would get 5 minutes. So that's how I started and what I did. And then in 2013, I had gotten on these shows from 2010 – 2011, 2012, I had gotten on the show called Guy Code on MTV, and it was Guy Code and Girl Code, and it was very popular amongst the college kids. It started to really become a big show in 2011 and 12. And a lot of time, people always think like people who have handicapped children, it's like, there's a stereotype like, oh, it's from a mother who's older. You always like, they get that amniocentesis thing, mm-hmm. and they're like, oh, my child is high risk of this and that because I'm older. And that's true. But what's also true is a lot of young mothers give birth to – because they don't have the proper prenatal care. Mm-hmm. So they give birth to a child with disabilities. So a lot of the children I was treating, their mothers were very young. Their mothers were 19, 20 years old, mm-hmm. and they already had 5 or 6 year olds. But they were watching Guy Code and Girl Code. So they would see me
– oh, my gosh.
When I was treating – be like, did I see you on MTV last night? So it started to become like this conflict of interest where the principal of the school was like, look, you can't treat children like this and then be talking about the Guy Code to hiding your boner.
Right.
Like it doesn't – so you're going to have to choose. And it's interesting. It's really interesting to – if you ever get a chance – I know you, I'm audience, ever get a chance to like talk or work with handicapped children, it's the best because there was a 7-year-old boy – who had cerebral palsy, so he was confined to a wheelchair, but cognitively 100% intact, no problems at all cognitively, just confined to a wheelchair because of his muscle issues. And I said to him, I said, we were talking, doing our therapy, and I was like, I may leave here and go do comedy, but I said, I'm scared. I'm selling this to a 7-year-old kid. And he was like, why are you scared? And I said, I don't know. I don't want to leave you guys. I don't really have any money. It's a big risk and all that. And he said, I wouldn't miss you. I mean, he said, I wouldn't miss you because I know that you would be going doing something you love. So I'd be happy for you.
Yeah, wow.
And I was like, wow. And he said, yeah. He said, I feel like, something you can do. It was crazy that a 7-year-old boy said this to me. And it just made me think like, wow, he's fucking right. He said to me, you have a chance to maybe go do something that you love in comedy or do something you love. He said, so I would go do it. He said, because all I want to do is walk up the stairs and I know I'll never be able to.
Wow.
He said, so at least you can go do something you love. And I was like, holy shit. I got like I was like, yeah, you're right. And I told one of the other therapists, I was like, oh, can you just watch for a second? I have to take a call to porn. I went and bawled my eyes out in the bathroom.
Because
he said it was so powerful to me. And then I made a decision to leave. I still go back and visit the kids and as much as I can.
You could do physical therapy on like an hourly thing here and there probably.
It could
be useful if you needed to. At least you've got that in your back pocket.
Exactly. I got it in my back pocket. But, coming into, now doing this career.
Are
like,
you here?
Full
you live here?
New York.
New York.
Live in New York. But now doing a full throttle, it's like, I just.
You have to travel on.
I travel a lot and I'm working and I love my job now. But you are right. That's another way I used to get spots too in the beginning is a lot of times comedians help other comedians in the beginning. That's the only stage time because club owners are just like, look, you're too green, you're too raw, I don't want to put you on. I would treat comedians who, a lot of comedians are ornithologists. Yeah, but it would always be like, sometimes it'd be like shoulder and neck related stuff.
Of course.
But a lot of times it'd be like, hey, look at my dick. That was a lot of things because a lot of guys, having unprotected sex, they have an STD.
Oh.
And there's a lot of comedians, I won't name names, who have went on to become pretty big that I've looked down their pee holes. And I've said, hey, buddy, I know you got me looking at your urethra right
now.
It's out of my scope of practice.
Right.
But they're like, yo, man, you got a doctorate degree. It would really help me if you could just take a peek. So I would take a peek. And there was a couple times I was like, yeah, listen, I only have a doctorate degree. I'm not an actual medical doctor, but you have herpes for sure. There's inflammation in there and there's redness and you got to go to the doctor, So yeah, man, that's how it transitioned into all that.
So
I'm trying to be the next Dr. Drew, babe.
You're on your way. I didn't actually have to look at anybody. I just had to speak to him over the phone.
Yeah.
So there are the stupid questions.
Yes.
YouTube the show, Comedy Central, tell me about that.
So Stupid Questions is a show, comes out, it's on Fridays on Comedy Central, and you can see it on YouTube. It's a thing that Comedy Central created, and I just went in and auditioned for, and it's just kind of a thing that we have comedians come in, and we just ask them rapid fire, stupid questions, like not a formal interview at all. Like I'll just ask them, like, you know, just off the top of my head, like I would ask you, like, if your nipples could be anywhere else on your body, where would you put them?
It's like the two palms that Galifianakis used to do.
Yeah.
Where would I put them?
In between two ferns, yeah.
In between two ferns, yeah. Yeah, where would you put your nipples?
Where would I put my nipples?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, hide it. Put it behind your balls.
Yeah, maybe I put them on my balls. Or somewhere. I don't know, man. Like maybe on over my eyes. I always get styes on my eyes. So maybe I just put them over my eyes to just take the attention off my styes.
Nipple eyes, or were you actually on the eyelids?
On the eyelids.
Yeah, the eyelids.
So you'd be like, is that a stye? I'd be like, no, it's my nipples. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I would do that.
And then History Hyenas. Tell me about that.
Okay, so History Hyenas, that's like really like the thing I'm very passionate about. I got a special coming out, and I love my, you know, Size 38 Ways Comedy Central. I'm proud of that. But History Hyenas, man, I love history.
All right.
Like I love everything about history. And me and my co-host, Giannis Pappas, we consume history. Like we'll talk about, like, you know, it's not like boring in the sense like we're just regurgitating stuff that, like reading off Wikipedia, or like we watch some documentary and we're like telling you the story. Like we're trying to put ourselves inside those historical periods and like what it is.
Like
for example, like we just did an episode on Mary, Queen of Scots, who's different than Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
And so Mary, Queen of Scots, Bloody Mary, and Bloody Mary was King Henry VIII's daughter, and Queen Elizabeth, who's like one of the greatest queens of all time, the first Queen Elizabeth. Those were like, you know, those, that was like the original feminist movement. Like before you had Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Beyonce, and Amy Schumer, you had Queen Elizabeth, Mary, Queen of Scots, and Bloody Mary. And we talk about like what their lives were like the kind of men they had to deal with, like King Henry VIII. Like when you learn about history, when you dive into history, it's like you realize like we're not so different from historical figures.
There's just
different parameters and there's different things on the line, but like everybody builds a wall.
Yeah.
Like this whole talk about the wall, it's like go to any ancient civil, they all build walls.
Yeah.
They're all trying to keep somebody out. Yeah. Everybody.
Yeah.
So
I just say try going across the border, Canada.
Yeah.
The utopia that's Canada, they will shake you the hell down.
100%.
Because there's a wall there and they don't want you going across it.
Absolutely.
Go up there with a work permit sometime. They shake you down.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree, man. I went to the UK a few months ago, and I'm, you know,
try going to Australia. It's impossible to get in there.
Dude, England, they're our friends.
Yeah.
England, yay, we're buddies. I go there, I was doing shows out there, and I didn't have the right visa work number, and I said, oh, I don't...
forget it.
They put me in a detention center underneath Heathrow Airport for 10 hours, and we're going to deport me back to the U.S. on a flight where if I wouldn't have gotten my proper visa, I wouldn't have been able to come back to the U.K. for a year for no reason, just because the one digit was off.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
They're fucking around, man. So I love History Hyenas. It's like, you know, we got an Instagram. We'd go do like history videos, because I think Giannis and I are both from Brooklyn. Like, you wouldn't think – at first, the first few episodes, fans were like, are you making fun of shit? Like, what? And we're like, no, we love history. Like, we'll go on history tours with like 80-year-old couples and just consume history.
What's your favorite history?
Revolutionary War.
Mm.
Love the Revolution.
Do you like Civil War?
I like the Civil War, too.
Have you read the Grant biography yet?
What's that?
The Grant biography. Have you read that biography?
I haven't read the Grant biography yet, but I know it was written by Mark Twain, right?
No. He did write one, but no, the one that's out now by Chernow.
No.
I'm
going to read it.
It'll change everything.
We're going to do an episode on Grant.
It'll blow your mind.
Interesting.
Yeah.
100%
I'm sort of a Lincolnophile a little bit, so I've read all his biographies and everything that's out there on him and their marriage and stuff. And so I thought I understood what followed. This Grant thing blew my mind.
So the newest Grant document.
Yeah, by Chernow. Same guy that wrote the Hamilton biography.
Did
you read the Hamilton biography?
I haven't read any of the ones. I got to read these.
If you like this Revolutionary War, you'll love that Hamilton thing.
But I knew about Alexander. I was an Alexander Hamilton guy before the musical.
Yeah.
I knew about Alex. I knew where his grave was. I knew where I used to walk down there in Trinity Church.
Did you know he was extorted and all that?
Yeah, I know all that
shit.
With
Mary, what's her name? Mary,
I'm blanking.
Yeah, I'm blanking too.
Yeah, but he was like, you know. Yeah, I know. Checks and balances. I know my man.
Smart
Alex.
Dude.
Bro, the founding fathers, geniuses.
Yeah.
100% geniuses.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, man.
Reynolds was the name you were looking for.
Reynolds. Maria Reynolds. The Maria Reynolds affair.
Yeah, dude.
He was totally taken advantage of that. It was almost comical the way they went after him.
I love it, man. I love history.
Yeah. Well, I read that Grant thing. It'll.
I'm going to read it. 100% going to read it.
It's really, really. You realize what a fucking mess Reconstruction was and how we just totally blew that.
The Civil War. I mean, you ever go to Gettysburg?
Yep.
Oh, God, man. Yeah, going down there was like unbelievable to see like an actual battlefield and to kind of envision what was happening and the chaos.
Yeah.
Woo.
Yeah. One of the things I've been thinking a lot about lately, and maybe you guys can give it some thought, is, you know, I always like to look at the current time and see where there have been previous cycles in history or similarities in previous times and how people have found their way out of these things or how things have gotten bad. Mm-hmm. And right now it just seems to me this tribalism and this amount of envy we have in our country is something that is – it's a trend. It's something specific is happening. My hunch is it's sort of a narcissistic turn we've had in terms of our personality structure. We've had so many destroyed families and adverse childhood experiences and all these horrible things that have happened for the last 30 years that have created this liability towards envy. And I'm wondering – the only thing I can find that's sort of similar is pre-revolutionary France.
Right.
And when they were doing the same stuff and having the same kinds of feelings about things and treating kids the same way that we've treated kids for a little while. And I just wonder if those other eras you've thought of or found.
The only other era that I've thought of with that, but I'm going to look into the pre-revolution France is, you know – ancient Rome, I mean, at the end of ancient Rome's empire, it was very similar to what we have now. You had, you know, people in power who felt like, you know, Socrates said, you know, obviously this is before ancient Rome, but Socrates was a big, he hated democracy.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, do not.
Right.
He said, because you'll, you know.
It'll destroy itself.
It'll destroy itself. Yeah. He said, once you allow everything to be okay, you'll see your democracy is ruined. He said, you can't have. Everybody can't be allowed to vote. He was like, that's stupid.
Yeah, direct democracy like we have in California, by the way. We have this thing where we have these referendums every time we vote. We just put things on the ballot. We vote on it.
Yeah.
And there are catastrophes every time.
Catastrophes every time.
Yeah.
It's like he's like, you know, you need to go to school for voting. Like that should be – that you shouldn't –
Well, the founding father said that too. That's why they felt education was so important. You had to have a certain ability to govern yourself.
Right.
But also we're not a democracy. We're supposed to have been a republic.
Right. So things got changed. Again, history. Things start to change little by little along the way. Mm-hmm. And I just read that book, Sapiens. Did you read that book?
Yep.
So I love that part. I love that book. And when he talks about like – even like culture. Like he's like, what is culture? Like culture is just something that I think is my culture. My great-great-great-great-great-grandfather would actually think what I'm doing is the opposite because what I'm doing is actually what the enemy was doing because they conquered me.
Yeah.
So he's like, you know, you got, you know, as a societies, we're all about culture and religion and this and fighting it. And it's silly because I know people say religion's not real. And yeah, it's not. And all that stuff. But it's not about that. It's about like I took that point. I was like, yeah, he's right. Like I like this kind of food, let's say. But it's like that may not be the kind of food that somebody was eating who was my culture 1,000 years ago.
No.
So then what does this all mean? It's silly.
So why do we get attached to the culture? Why do we defend it so ridiculously?
Yeah. And I think what you said before, tribalism to me, you know, yeah, there's racism and sexism and all that stuff and every isms. But tribalism is that's what we are as humans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every animal is like that. Mm-hmm. If you're not in
primates,
if you're not in the tribe, then you're not accepted. And it's just what it is. Like, you know, like I – listen, if you're in a different race, religion, creed, color, I don't mind. It's fine. But I think people deep, deep, deep in their core, they want to be around people that look like members of their tribe. It's just something in our DNA. I don't know. I can't explain it scientifically. People way smarter than me can. But it's just the truth. That doesn't mean treat people unfairly. And be an asshole to somebody.
Nor does it mean if we have those tendencies, we should give in to them in any way.
Exactly.
We should acknowledge them and then override them with our good brain.
Well, it's a proven fact that when you have children outside your, you know, when you mix races and have children, they have stronger immune systems.
Yep.
You know, they have the strongest immune systems.
No, they're better genetically.
Genetic
diversity is a better
product.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the closer you get to who you are.
Which I think that's why, to me, that's why this tribalism to me is so bizarre that we have that evolved mechanism. Yep. Why, if genetic admixture is better, why do we isolate it from one another? It's weird.
It's interesting. It's because I think we're bored and we're alone because if aliens came to the planet tomorrow, the tribalism would be humans versus aliens.
Yeah.
We would all be one tribe then.
Yeah.
So it's just – I think it's a product of we're things have gotten so good in this country specifically that now we're bored and now we're just looking for things to be mad about.
Too good for too long.
Exactly.
I think there is something about that.
That's what I think about it, man. You know, but I also I'm a person who I choose to be in the gray zone. Like I, you know, I understand the left. I understand the right.
I'm in the same. I'm in the middle. You're in a field though, where you know, as you said, when you look at history, you try to put yourself in the position of people in that moment.
Yeah.
But your job as a physical therapist, doing it right as a doc, particularly at a doctorate level position, putting yourself in the kid's position. What would it be like? What are they managing? What's it like to be them? So I can help them. Move along. And most people aren't trained. They don't know how to do that.
I do it. I do that. I do that. And then I do like that thing that where it's like, if it's not going to matter in 5 years, I don't waste more than 5 minutes on it. Mm. I do that. Road rage. These things are just like, it's in my past, man. I'm just calm with it. I try to understand people. Like yesterday, I was on a flight and the flight attendant gave this man his jacket when we landed, a sports coat, and she folded it as she gave it back to him. He started screaming at her, "Why would you fold my jacket, lady?
Come on.
Like went nuts, right? And it's easy to be like, well, fuck this guy and, you know, call, and problem. And, you know, I was like, in my head, I was like, I feel like there's something wrong. Like,
something's wrong with him.
There's something either mentally he's not healthy or something going on.
Drinking, whatever.
Sure enough, we're walking to get off the flight. Wife calls him. He starts tearing up. Oh, I hear the conversation. He says, "Hey," he says, he said, "I just landed. My dad died."
Yeah.
So he said that. So he was going through something big. Mm-hmm. And then as he's leaving, apologizes to the flight attendant. But we live in a world where if that happened, because it was like the guy was white, the flight attendant was black, if somebody snagged their phone and put out a video recording of that, you don't know what the hell's going on. That goes out, racist, blah, 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 that whole narrative gets followers on Instagram, creates an angry mob. Next thing you know, revolution problems. And it's.
Yeah, look into where mobs have been so active like they are right now. That's not normal.
Yeah.
To have mobs that just take over like this. And they need blood now. Somebody has to lose a job.
They have
to. Before they're happy, yeah.
My father, not an educated guy, got through eighth grade, but a very street smart guy who was in and out of jail, kind of like, you know, criminal kind of guy. Great guy, but just, you know, whatever, wrong crowd, did stupid shit. He said, and this is a guy who said, eighth grade education, when Twitter started to get big, 2009, 2010, he was like, "This is going to be a big problem, Chrissy." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He said, "Not everyone's supposed to be heard from. You're not supposed to give everybody a voice. That's not the way this works." He was like, "You're going to have too many stupid people on this thing, and you'll see. It's going to be problems." I was like, "Wow, yeah." And he said, he was like, "You know, with him, he's like, you know, whatever work he was doing, he's like, I just get told what to do. I don't question the boss." And it's like, yeah, he's right. Because now you have a lot of stupid people who have become very powerful.
Right. The valence is the same as some, you know, professor in Harvard.
Yeah, I mean,
they heard their opinions equal.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, look, I have a high education. I don't think that I'm the smartest guy in the room by any means. I get guys run circles around me. But I mean, especially doing comedy like all over the country, you meet a lot of people in our country are just, they're very, very stupid. Like they have a low, I'm not, and I don't mean stupid, I mean like stupid where.
Like measurably.
Like measurably.
The median IQ is 100 because that's the median.
Right. Also, I think even worse, some people have a decent IQ, but they're being stupid in the sense that they're not educating themselves, they're not sharpening their skills. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody has got a low IQ and then it's like it's not their fault. Mm-hmm. But some of these people, it's like you're choosing to listen to some guy who's already done the work, who potentially has done the work wrong, and whatever he's pontificating, you're choosing to be one of his or her disciples, and you're not giving any thought into why you agree with he or she. Because if I asked you a follow-up question, you would say, "Oh, I don't know, I never thought about that." And it's like, well, you're stupid then. You better have, if you're gonna go into one of these people, on one of these disciples, one of these churches on Twitter and be a stout person for
flat earther,
whatever, flat earth, you better, if I ask you questions, you better have the answers to every question I ask you, and then I'll believe, okay, at least you did your research. Or not, you're just stupid.
There's a guy named Dave McCraney, does a podcast called You Are Not So Smart.
Right.
It talks about all the cognitive distortions that people have. You might like that.
I would love
it. Yeah, because it'll help you understand.
I got a lot of homework with you.
I know. I'm giving you stuff
too. Hey, listen, I'm down, man. I love to learn.
I know. I can tell.
Yeah.
Here's a shocking fact about probiotics. According to Naveen Jain, billionaire, founder of Viome, the at-home test that measures gut bacteria count, almost no probiotics show up in people's gut analysis. This means 99% of probiotics don't colonize your gut as they claim. Still, research shows we need good bacteria to fight the bad. The solution I'm suggesting is a single-strain proteolytic probiotic called P3OM. I take it myself. P3OM uses a patented natural process to upgrade a well-researched probiotic strain. The result is a super strain that Wade Lightheart calls the Navy SEAL of probiotics. The P3OM proves the strain is proteolytic, that is, it digests protein, and it's maintainable in the human digestive system. What's in your gut? P3OM doubles every 20 minutes and helps get rid of the bad guys before it is eliminated. To see it in action, go to p3om.com/drew. Again, that is p3om.com/drew. And watch it just dissolve a piece of raw steak. Try P3OM risk-free today. They have the best guarantee. It is a 365-day full money-back guarantee. What do you got to lose? And if you don't find P3OM, the most potent probiotic you've ever taken, their support team will give you all your money back, no question asked. All you got to do is go to p3om.com/drew and just be sure to enter the coupon code Drew at checkout and receive another 20% discount. 60 seconds, that's how long I'll be speaking with you, and that is how long it takes to get a true cash offer with TrueCar. That's right, you can do that in a minute. You can also floss your teeth or pet your dog or do some sit-ups, but True Cash offer much more effective, efficient use of your time. And best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or your home. You just go to True Car, simply enter your license plate number, watch your car's details pop up, answer a few questions. You'll get an accurate True Cash offer from a local True Car certified dealer. It is that easy. After that, you bring your car in, they check it out, ask you some questions, and then that's it. You get your True Cash offer right then for either cash or for trade-in. And so you're going to either leave with a check or trade in for a new ride. If you do trade in for a new ride, be sure to use TrueCar to look at that scattergram, lock in a price for an actual vehicle on a TrueCar certified dealer's lot. And it's an actual price. It includes accessories and fees, everything. So simple. When you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. Sunday Scaries, that's right. These are CBD gummies custom formulated with a 10 milligram broad spectrum and isolate CBD as well as vitamins B12 and D3. They are made with natural ingredients free of gluten, dairy, yeast, egg, soy, peanuts. Sunday Scaries can be ordered online from their website, Sunday Scaries, Sunday like the day of the week, Scaries, S-C-A-R-I-E-S, one word, SundayScaries.com, shipped directly to your front door. There also are subscription packages for recurring monthly orders. And right now, for our listeners, you can buy Sunday Scaries with a 10% discount and free shipping at SundayScaries.com using promo code Drew, D-R-E-W, that is SundayScaries.com. Use promo code D-R-E-W. They contain no THC. They are not rewarding, not getting you high, not addictive. And although the clinical science has not caught up with CBDs yet, we are researching it actively. And certainly we've all heard tons of anecdotal reports of very significant effects. Sunday Scaries customers are young professionals, entrepreneurs, college students, and these people want a natural and approachable solution. Sunday Scaries can be ordered online from their website, SundayScaries.com, and shipped directly to your doorstep. Again, they're part of many people's health maintenance these days. And, of course, the clinical science has not yet caught up with some of the anecdotal reports, but a lot of patients are reporting very significant benefits. Be sure to discuss with your doctors. Do not take any product on your own. But this appears to be safe. It appears to be non-rewarding, so it does not cause addiction or high. And, of course, our listeners can buy Sunday Scaries with a 10% discount and free shipping if you go to SundayScaries.com and use the promo code Drew, D-R-E-W. Again, Sunday Scaries gummies contain zero THC. They are non-rewarding, non-addict-forming. They have B12, D3, and they're made with natural ingredients, free of gluten, dairy, yeast, egg, soy, or peanuts. Again, it is Sunday Scaries, Sunday like the day of the week, Scaries, S-C-A-R-I-E-S. OneWord.com. Use promo code Drew at D-R-E-W. New to Podcast One, check out Two Cups of Joe with Joey Fatone and Joe Mulvihill. Hot off his appearance on The Masked Singer, the NSYNC singer turned actor joins his manager of 25 years to take you behind the curtain of pop culture with their unique connections in show business. Download Two Cups of Joe with Joey Fatone and Joe Mulvihill every Thursday on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Across my clinical experiences, I've had unique opportunities to help people in different ways. Blue Emu has been trusted by Americans for over 15 years to support healthy muscles and joints. Now they produced an Amazon coupon code made specifically for our audience. That's you. Go to Amazon today and use code 3DREW for a $3 off coupon. It's simple. Go to Amazon, search for Blue Emu, BLUE-EMU, add to cart, apply the code. Again, the code is 3, the number 3, DREW. Blue Emu has a large portfolio of products, all American-made and of the highest quality. I recommend their deep penetrating formula of Blue Emu Original for soothing tired muscles, maximum arthritis for arthritic pain. Of course, lidocaine as a numbing pain relief works very well. Not only do these formulas work great, but there's no chill, no burn, and no odor. Use this opportunity to support your muscles and joints. The code is 3DREW. One more time, the code is number 3, DREW.
Where'd you grow up exactly?
Brooklyn, New York.
Where?
Like Ridgewood, Bushwick area.
Bushwick.
It's very gentrified now.
I know.
My mother bought her house in 1986 for like $35,000. It's worth like almost $2 million.
Oh, it's insane what's going on over there, isn't it?
Nuts, man.
That's sort of near the park, isn't it?
I live close to there's a park and what park? Prospect Park?
The Prospect Park.
No. Prospect Park is on the other side of Brooklyn. That's like a more uppity.
Okay.
That's where my friend, my co-host for History Hyenas, Giannis Pappas, he's from uppity Brooklyn where his parents were lawyers, you know, his brother's
a
lawyer.
It's all like that, no doubt.
But
it's all of it.
But I was from the part of Brooklyn where it's like working class, like everyone's cops, firemen, criminals.
Yeah.
You know, it's everybody. So it's like.
Freaking Amazon's going to be there in a few
Long
minutes.
Island City.
Yeah.
Yeah, which people are not happy about.
I know. My daughter lives over there and she's like, I'm going to get priced out of this neighborhood. And
she might.
I know.
In Long Island City she lives?
Nearby.
Great neighborhood, Long Island City.
And I said, you get a job over there.
Yeah.
You can't beat them, join them.
Yeah. Are you from New York?
And I spent a lot of time there. I got a place in the West Side and I just love I'm actually in love with the city. It's weird.
You got Upper West Side look and vibe. But it's a positive thing.
The way Upper West Side is now, it's very. Very mixed neighborhoods.
Yeah,
they're communities.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. You go on the east side.
Upper. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's why I said Upper West Side. You're not an Upper East Side guy.
No,
you're an Upper West Side guy. We like the Upper West Side guys.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's the only city in the country, in the world that it's weird. I'm in love with that city.
New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. You know, it's like. It's I miss it every time I leave, man. I miss it. I wouldn't have traded growing up anywhere else.
It's crazy. I can't explain it. It's uncanny. But I guess you know, if we lived in Roman times, we'd want to live in Rome, right? We'd probably love that too.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, there's a lot of great cities in our country.
Yep.
It's a lot of great
and
cities.
What's got to be fun about being a comedian touring the country, you get to see it all.
It's a lot of great cities. But I mean, it's New York City. Is the city. Let's fucking be honest with ourselves
for a second. But to be fair, a lot of people don't know how to relate to it. It took me a long time to figure it out. And you got to like live in it a while to get a piece of it.
Yeah, but I'm like, you know, it's like everybody just argues now. Everyone wants to be a contrarian all of a sudden. It's like I was listening to these people talk and it was just like
the city?
Yeah, in the city.
Yeah.
And they weren't from New York. And this one guy was trying to argue that, number one, this is what he said to me. This is what he said to his friend. He said, I think Houston's as good a city as New York. It's like, listen, Houston's a good city. I got no problems with Houston. But are you out of your fucking mind? Houston? The whole city's spread out. There's a highway that runs through the whole city.
There's no city.
It's 130 degrees, and it's always underwater.
I mean, if you had a zillion dollars, there's that one nice, crazy nice area.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. I'm not shitting on Houston. Yeah. But to compare it to New York, you're out of your fucking mind.
I can't even compare them.
Yeah. And then the second thing he says is he thinks Vietnamese food is better than Italian food. And that's when I almost pulled out a weapon because I was like, okay, listen, if aliens invaded this planet tomorrow.
Well, it depends how their GI system was set up. Let's be fair.
But okay, let's be fair. But I'm just saying, as a human race, if we had one chance to broker a deal, as a human race, we're having the meeting in New York and we're serving them Italian food as our best options to offer. Tell me, I'm not wrong about that.
Oh, you're talking about to somebody who loves Italian food.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's what it is. Vietnamese food. What the fuck? It has no sauce. You can't have your food doesn't qualify if it's got no sauce, no cheese. And I like Vietnamese food, but to compare it to Italian food, it's like people are losing their minds. They're bored. These two guys were bored guys. They have nothing real to talk about, so they're just making shit up. And then they'll probably write a blog about it.
And do you live in the city still?
No, I live in Brooklyn now, Bay Ridge, Brooklyn.
Oh,
I bought
a
place out there.
Good for you.
Yeah, see, and that's another thing too. a lot. Here's another thing I'll say. A lot of people, you know, it's like their political opinions, you know, don't matter. They have these political opinions because of their circumstance of their life. It's like, yeah, I was a lot more liberal. I still am liberal, but I was a lot more liberal before I was a dad and before I was a homeowner. Now I own a home and have a daughter. So you just inevitably move a little right. You're like, you know what? Listen, I can't have all this shit around here, and I want this, and I want that, and I need the police. But, you know, it's easy to say fuck the police when you're renting. Who gives a shit if somebody breaks into your place?
Right.
But it's like, I own this spot.
Right.
You know, I got a kid I got to protect. It's like, oh, yeah, fuck the police. Okay, yeah, you rent, you have seven roommates, you eat ramen noodles with your hands. The police, nobody cares.
Property owner. Property is the source of evil in this culture, I say.
Dude, I'm telling you, man. I know I'm an evil property owner, but it's a nice asset.
I bet. I'm in Brooklyn. It sounds awesome.
New York, baby.
And you have a – how's your child?
My daughter's 3 years old.
Congratulations.
Half Puerto Rican, half Italian.
Fantastic.
It's a nice New York, sassy little girl.
Genetic admixturing. It's perfect.
There it is. Immune system's unbelievable. Yeah. She's beautiful. It's great. Strong kid.
I'm having a personal reaction to your not doing physical therapy, I'm realizing. I know what you had to do to get that degree.
Yeah.
And I feel like, oh, man, just giving that all up, I can't stand it.
My mom.
I can't stand it. But not only you being deprived of that opportunity to do a little bit of clinical work, the world's being deprived of all that.
Yeah, listen, this is
why.
So you're
working my shoulder before.
This is why my mother loves you, and this is why she was excited when I told her I was doing your show, because she literally echoes exactly what you just said. She's like, I don't understand why you would go 3.5 years.
No, I understand why, because you love comedy. I get it, but it bothers me. It just bugs me. It's like, damn.
Well, do you still practice? Do
you
still
treat I do. And I couldn't not do it.
Very interesting.
But to be fair, everything I do is tied up in that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Your comedy is separate from physical therapy. A separate thing.
Yeah, because it's almost like, and again, I shouldn't really care about this, but in some ways I do, and it's reality. It's like I'm at a point in my career where I'm, you know, I got things coming out. I'm hoping to get to that next level, and it's like, if people were just randomly seeing me, if I could just randomly still treat patients in an office, I don't know if I'd be preventing myself.
Nah.
You know what I mean?
It's just you wouldn't have the flexibility you need.
The flexibility, and also another thing, I feel like I'm not old, but I'm 34. I'm getting older. I only have a finite amount of energy each day, and I feel like I want to use all that energy to make my career in comedy and entertainment. I don't want to use any of the energy in physical therapy. Maybe if I get to a place where I'm comfortable with my career and I really hit it big, maybe I'd do it again. I still keep up. I still do continuing ed courses.
Good.
And I still have my license.
Yeah, don't lose it.
It hasn't lapsed.
I have fantasies about going back and do critical care and stuff. I fantasize about it all the time.
Yeah.
I don't do it because I don't really
– Yeah.
It's sort of a young man's game. You know what I mean? It's like it takes a lot of energy and overnights and this and that. But I can't let it go.
I know. My daughter's godfather's an emergency room physician.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's working all day throughout hours of night, but that adrenaline rush, like that, what he talks about, like how he's like more excited about his life than I am, and I don't do anything.
It's swashbuckling. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And you really can really make a difference.
In the beginning of your career, what medicine were you doing?
I'm an internist by training, and then I ended up moonlighting a psychiatric hospital and then ended up taking over their medical services, then I took over their addiction services. And so I kind of had two simultaneous careers. One was in psychiatric hospital running departments, and the other was straight medicine, inpatient and outpatient.
I initially wanted to be a psychologist, not a psychiatrist. I was a psych major in college, but then I went into physical therapy. But I'm fascinated with the brain and how it works, and it's unbelievable.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like just, I mean, the power in our heads is like.
Yeah, it's nutty.
Nutty, man.
Yeah. All right, what else are we going to talk about? Because I could talk to you all day. Twitter, Instagram is also at Chris D. Comedy, right?
Yeah, it's at Chris D. Comedy on everything I do, ChrisDComedy.com, everything I do.
Animated series?
I got an animated – so I have an overall deal with Comedy Central where I'm doing my hour special, which is coming out, size 38 waist. I'm doing a second hour special. Then I got an animated comedy series about my life that I'm going to do a pilot about.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah. I had a pilot with CBS that didn't get picked up, that we shot and everything.
If there's a doctor in your character in your series, I'm right here.
Through.
I'm in.
Well, Chaz Palminteri played my dad, so it was great because Bronx Tale is like my favorite movie. And then Annie Potts played my mom.
Oh, how fun.
And Ghostbusters was my other favorite movie. So it was like, this is like, I can't believe what this is. And the show didn't get picked up. But, you know, I feel now that I'm having the opportunity again with Comedy Central, I learned a lot. Like I learned
this is the nature of that business.
In entertainment, man, I learned like, listen, if it feels wrong in my gut for me, it's wrong and I got to stick with it. Because there was a lot of gut choices that I just overrode. I was like, no, these guys know what they're talking about. I don't. Ain't true. You know, because I listened to every single word CBS told me, and they still didn't pick up my show. So now it's like, I'm never going to let that happen to me again. If you're not going to pick up my show, that's fine, but it's going to be everything that I wanted it.
Or figure out who you can listen to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because sometimes you may need that input, but yeah, it's certainly not necessarily television executive.
Right. Exactly. Just yeah. Plan.
Your undergraduate degree is philosophy?
No, psychology.
Psychology.
Philosophy. Well, yeah. Hey, listen, you want to talk philosophy, we can talk philosophy.
Are you guys into that too?
Yeah. I mean, we – see, the thing is with – my co-host Giannis and I, the History of Hyenas, we walk around all day. We sit by the water. It was right, you know, right by. We live right on shore by Shore Road in Bay Ridge, right off the Hudson River. We look.
God, that's one of those beautiful spots in this.
Yeah, we just look. We could see downtown Manhattan. Yeah. We look at the Verrazano Bridge, Staten Island. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's actually exactly.
Are you way down at that end, or are by the Brooklyn Bridge?
Well, we're closer. We're by the Verrazano Bridge.
Yeah, okay.
We actually, where we live, where we sit every day and like drink coffee and think of shit, is the exact point of entry. It's called Denise's Ferry. The exact point of entry where the British entered the 13 colonies when they came over to fight the war, the exact point of entry.
Crazy.
So it's pretty cool.
And they routed Washington.
Routed it. Yeah. And Battle of Brooklyn fucking destroyed.
Yeah.
And
that's almost where we lost the war, right there.
Right there.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for fog and rain and Washington could evacuate the troops, we would have been fucked.
It's another great book about a Brooklyn preacher, the most famous man in America, about Henry Ward Beecher.
Okay.
Which was Harriet Beecher Stowe's brother. And he was the most famous man in America all through the Civil War and immediately afterwards.
Really?
Yeah, he's a famous preacher. He's messing around with some of the chicks in his cloister there and ended his career in disgrace. And he was sort of scratched out of the record.
I got to read these books, man. You got to write me a list when we get off, because that's four things that I have to do now.
Yeah,
I'm going to do them all by tomorrow.
Podcast, a couple books.
Yeah.
All right. I got to kind of wrap things up here.
Come on. Let's go Road Dog.
All right. What do you want to
roll? No,
what do you
want?
Oh, we can. I got 5 minutes or so, give or take.
What do you want to talk about? Well,
what do you want to talk about? I really enjoy talking to you.
I enjoy talking to you.
Yeah.
What can we talk about, man? I don't know. I'm here. I'm in LA now. I like this.
Little physical therapy conversations, the stuff that – how do you think about PR, platelet-rich plasma? Do you think that's anything?
No.
Stem cell?
No. Stem cell stuff. No. I'm trying to think. You know, what can we talk about? I'll tell you, we could talk about life a little bit. Now my dad's like 75 years old. He's like, you know, not that he's sick, but the diabetes has caught up. He's got like no knees and he's just like, I can see a man who's not what he used to be. Cause my dad used to be the kind of guy, like, here's my dad. He was a guy, old school guy, never really knew what he did for work. He was like a criminal, right? He met my mother at a walkathon. My mother's a very nice person. She was raising money for breast cancer at this one day and at a walkathon. And my dad was doing community service on the side of the walkathon. It was like a fucking criminal. It was like a prison release thing.
He's in an orange jumpsuit.
That's where we met my mom. So my dad was the kind of guy where, like, he was full of energy. Like, I remember my parents divorced when I was one. When I was 15, my mom was dating. First of all, my mom started to date one of my immediate friends, very close friends, fathers. So at 15 years old, that's a horror story for me because anytime the conversation would be at a low.
You're getting your balls busted.
Yeah, they'd be like, yo, what do you think Brian's dad is doing? And somebody'd be like banging Chris's mom. And I'd be like, oh, God. So fighting. But I remember my dad, my mom was dating this guy, and then he dumped her. My mom's boyfriend dumped her and started dating a woman directly across the street from my mother. Like, directly. Not down this road. Like, so my mom would sit every day and, like, look out this window, heartbroken, waiting for it. It was brutal.
Ugh.
So one day my dad comes to pick me up because on the weekends he would pick me up. That was his time to see me. He'd take me back to Staten Island. And he's like, what's your mother doing looking out the window? And I was like, well, she broke up with that guy. And he was like, and? I was like, well, he's dating a woman across the street.
Uh-oh.
And he was like, oh, really? And I said, yeah. He said, you do anything about that? I was like, what? I'm 15. What do you mean? Did I do anything about that? He goes, I'm going to go get us some bagels. Stay here. Don't come downstairs. So I was like, okay. So like 10 minutes go by. I hear my mother screaming, Tony, stop. You're going to kill him. Christopher, go get your father. So I run down the stairs. I see my dad beating the shit out of this guy. It was like that scene in Goodfellas when he goes across the street, Ray Liotta, and just starts beating the shit out of the guy for Karen. And my dad's – I get to the stairs, and my dad's like, this is your job. This is what you were supposed to do.
Oh.
And I was like, what? What? And then right away, like, because my dad always knew, like, because he, you know, could get violent and aggressive, but he always wanted the right, he always had the right intention, but the wrong move. Mm. So very quickly, he was like, look, I shouldn't have done that. That was wrong. Because the guy, you know, the guy ran in the house and, you know, was a pussy or whatever. The guy was like, so he was like, I shouldn't have done that. He's like, but he said, look, me and your mother have been divorced for a long time. My dad was remarried for 15 years by now. He said, don't ever let anyone disrespect
your mother.
Your mother, or yeah. If you're the man in the house, you have to watch over these people. He said, I'm not here anymore. You have to watch over these people. So I was like, yeah. And my dad was always like that, where it was like he would take me on some like adventure. Like I remember once I was a kid and my mom thought I was like really being too much of a pussy. Like I was like scared of everything. I was scared of the dark. I was sleeping in the bed with my mom till I was like 11. Mm. Like it was too much where my mom was like, something's wrong with this kid. Mm. So she was like, take him hunting. So my dad, I remember, he doesn't know how to hunt, but he was like, all right, let's do it. So we went. My dad would just be down for anything. So we went. We were driving in New Jersey. We're driving on the New Jersey Turnpike. And then my dad just turns off the highway. Not off an exit. He just turned off the highway into the woods and pulled out a gun from his glove box. Like an illegal. I don't know if it was illegal. I'm sure it was illegal.
Like a handgun?
A handgun. And we sat. He sat in a lawn chair and he just showed me how to pull the trigger and just had me shoot at animals. I don't know that I hit anything. I may have killed some, I don't know. But that's how my dad was. And now he's older. And, you know, he has a granddaughter, you know, she's only 3. And I watch him, like, not be able to, like, do what he wants to do.
Sure.
And it's like this thing about, like, you know, we're all going. Mm-hmm. You're not going to beat it.
No,
you're not
aging is a disease process.
It's a disease process. Yeah, we're
it's
all
going to happen.
Nobody,
if you're lucky enough.
Yeah.
You're lucky enough to have that happen, right?
Yeah, nobody's getting out of this alive.
Yeah.
Nobody's getting out of this alive. And it's like
this is why this grandiosity is weird. We're going to live to 120.
No.
Yeah, go stay around an 80-year-old sometime. You tell me what that's like.
It's like, you know what, man? I'm one of those guys, like, I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I want to live my life to the fullest, try to keep myself as healthy as possible, but understand I'm not getting out of this shit alive. And I'm seeing it for the first time in my dad. It's like, you ain't beating this, man. This is all going away that nobody gets out of this alive. And it just puts into perspective for me, like, you know, just to try to be in the moment as much as possible. Because, I mean, everyone says, oh, you know, next moment could be your last and all that. And we all know, live by that. But until you start to see a family member really getting old,
yeah,
you know, does it start to put into perspective?
A philosopher said something like, men should live as long as they should, not as long as they can.
Interesting. Interesting.
You know what I mean?
That's a really good quote.
Yeah. That should be a certain kind of life and a certain contribution and all that.
Yeah.
Not just as long as you can. That doesn't that isn't meaningful.
Dude, let's go fucking get naked and do shrooms in the woods.
That'd be,
do you want to do that? Like, look at your shoulder?
If you promise to fix my shoulder.
I'll fix your shoulder, man.
Shrooms scare me a little bit, but I worry about hallucinogens in my brain.
Yeah, I've never done any type of psychedelic drug at all.
Mushrooms. But if I had end-of-life issues, I'd take shrooms for sure.
Yeah? What drugs have you taken? Anything cool?
Just cocaine, alcohol, and pot. That's it.
I've never done cocaine either.
Yeah.
I guess it's too late, right, for me to do it now?
Why start now in your heart, you know, cardiac stuff I worry about.
Yeah, that's what I'm always worried about, the cardiac stuff. I just genetically have high blood pressure, high cholesterol, so I don't want to fuck with
it. So you have a metabolic syndrome.
Yeah, dad diabetes, mom
do you take?
No, I should, because I got a size 38 waist. I'm 230.
So two pieces of advice. I have the same thing.
And really?
Yeah, when I was about your age, I was, you know, I'd get these physicals, and finally a physician looked at me and went, dude, and I was running and losing weight, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to control my blood pressure and cholesterol. Never budged. And did that for years. And finally, this woman looks at me and goes, you know, you can only outrun your genetics so long. I was like, God damn it. She's so right. I'm such an asshole.
Yeah.
Of course. And took tiny bit of medicine. Boom. Right down where
she's right
now,
so you've been on blood pressure and cholesterol medicine.
For many years. 15 years probably.
So, yeah, because I feel like sometimes I get worried. I'm 34. I'll go into these doctor's office. My pressure's 136 over 90. My cholesterol.
Yeah, you should treat that.
My total cholesterol's 230, 240.
LDL or VLDL, more importantly.
My I forgot what that was, but I know my
– It's probably –
HDL was in the 60s, so that's
– Okay. But look, the other thing, low fat, low carb, low sugar, no sugar, that kind of stuff does improve the all of this.
Yeah.
Because I believe that if you can get this down, this central obesity.
Yeah.
I think carbohydrates are a major contributor to that, to people like us.
Yeah.
And if you can – this is an inflammatory organ, and if you can get that down, a lot of this stuff improves.
And that's the low carb, low sugar.
Like I try to do no carb, no sugar myself.
Really?
Yeah.
What about red meat?
Lots of it.
So you're not one of those guys against red meat. Mm-hmm. So you'll eat a cheeseburger, just not the bread, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think I could solve my problems like that. Because I you know, and obviously knowing what my pressure and all that, only that stuff started to go through the roof when I had a medical, when I started to get medical knowledge.
Yeah.
Because like what you don't know can't hurt you, but I know.
Now you know what's up. But there's a guy who works here at the Corolla Network, Vinny Tortorich. You can look his stuff up. He's very good at coaching on these kinds of diets and stuff.
Yeah.
But still, you may need a little bit of med. I mean, you just got to do it.
I mean, I had
think high, about it. High blood pressure for too long, you just know the consequences of profound.
Yeah, the silent killer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like –
And the meds are so great now. You don't I even know I'm taking anything.
Right.
I mean,
right.
There's no side effects. Like some of these, you know, ARBs and – oh, my gosh. They're fine.
And your pressure is just low, low, low.
Perfect.
And once you start it, you can't stop it. That's
you
the only –
You can, but the reason I started it is I've tried everything else. It
right.
didn't work. I did it for too long, frankly. I should have gone on it sooner.
Right.
And that's that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
All right. All right, now we got to wrap it up. Thank you for that story.
Of course.
And privileged to see you. I hope you won't be a stranger around here.
I wouldn't. Yeah, and, I want to be back.
What's coming up? We go to your website to find out what's coming up.
Yeah.
Which website you might be able to go to?
ChrisDComedy.com.
There you go. Thanks so much, Chris.
All right, brother. Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
For calling times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's DRDREW Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.